A sweet and wholesome boy. That's what's coming up on The Art of Bombing, episode 195.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublitz Jr. here with you today, Tuesday, March 23rd, 2021. Hope everybody had a great week, and I hope you're having a great week so far. Today, we got a great episode on the show today. Sean Dangler, he is a great comedian from Iowa that joined me. We had a great conversation about a lot of different things, and that's what's going to be coming up today. Before we get to that, I will like to say today, like I said, it is March 23rd. It is also my partner's birthday, so happy birthday, Tara. She's having a great birthday so far. We're going to have a great birthday dinner tonight. So if you know Tara, make sure you wish her a happy birthday today. She'll enjoy that. Before we get to this episode with Sean, just a couple quick things. This intro is going to be a lot shorter than they have been the last few times. I don't really have any ad copy to go through or any promo swaps this week. So if you haven't joined the Patreon yet, I suggest doing that. You can get ad-free, intro-free released episodes, and you get them early, too. You get all the recordings early, getting all the videos. Lots of great stuff that I'm trying to do with Patreon, so go check that out, patreon.com/artofbombingpod. Sign up. You can get sign up for $5 a month, and you get all kinds of great stuff, great benefits there. Or you can sign up for $10 a month if you want and get even more benefits, but it'll help the show out a bunch as we're on episode 195. And that means we're getting closer to episode 200. I'm hoping to do something cool for episode 200. We'll see how that goes. Another thing, if you haven't got to the website yet, you need to go to artofbombingpod.com where you can pick up your pushback pins. That's right, the Art of Bombing pins. You can get stickers, all kinds of merch, apparel on the website. If you want to support the show that way, you can. But the best way to support the show will always be by leaving a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser or anywhere where you can leave a review. Leave that 5-star review, give our 5-star rating, give us a nice review, say some nice words. That'll help us out tremendously. And then for me, I will be performing on a comedy show, virtual comedy show, Saturday, March 27th. The show's called On the Zoom Comedy Show, March 27th. That's at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which means 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. So if you want to see me do some virtual comedy, I'm headlining that virtual show. Go to my website, danbublitz.com, where you can find all the info regarding that show. All right, well, this has been a real treat, and we're about to have another real treat with this great conversation with Sean Dangler. Enjoy.
And now, it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
I live in Urbandale now, but I'm originally from a very small town in Iowa. I'm guessing some of you guys are probably from a small town. About, my town's like 1500 is where I grew up. I grew up on a farm outside of town. But anybody else, anyone kid lower than that? What do you got?
800.
800, okay. But the best part about it, if you go to small town Iowa, there's not much to do there. But the best thing is they have awesome, like, they all have their claims to fame. Like, you go to Sac City, Iowa, they got a huge popcorn ball. That's it. Like, I'm not kidding. There's a popcorn ball. You go to Brandon, Iowa, up by Waterloo, Cedar Falls, they got Iowa's largest frying pan. In my town, my hometown of Traer, Iowa.
Traer?
You guys know Traer? Wait, what? No. No, you don't. This is weird if you all know where Traer is.
They're drunk there Minionite.
Huh? Sunnyside?
The only bar downtown that I know of.
There's two. Okay. Was it outside the winding stairs? That's basically it. Were there stairs outside the building?
Yes.
Then you're at Sunnyside. Good place. Highly recommend. Go to Troy, Iowa. Go to Sunnyside. Yeah. Do not go to the windup, though. That's where the people who get kicked out of Sunnyside end up. So I'm going here. Okay, no one's interested in my bar tour of Troy. That's fine. I am from Troy, Iowa. Our claim to fame are stairs, like I said. The Winding Stairs. We have a town festival called the Winding Stairs Festival. And by festival, I really just mean a Busch Light party beer tent. That's all it is in Traer. And if you go to Traer, again, small town, there's three ways into the town of Traer. Each of the three ways, there's a sign that says, Wind Up in Traer. Very clever. We narrowly beat out our neighboring town's slogan of Beeman, Iowa. Their slogan of you're not dreaming. You're in Beeman. That's their slogan. It's cool. Beat them in baseball. Doesn't matter. It's cool.
And maybe it's partially because I don't, because I'm not around people, I'm not talking as much. So I'm just like sitting here by myself all day, you know, listening to podcasts, doing my own work. And then they asked me to do this. And then as soon as I had to go talk, my voice was all like, I'm like, no, I need to get this done.
I get that. I mean, like, whenever I played sports in high school or whatever, always felt like I had to shit before a game, no matter what. And I didn't have to. Like, I don't know if it's the same type of thing. It's like, oh, fuck, I really got to do this all of a sudden. Put the pressure on, I got to fucking shit.
Yep. Oh, man, well, that's good. So you, things are open where you're at, aren't they? They'd never shut down, right?
Oh, man, no, not at all. Iowa is, Kim Reynolds, our governor, just going with the whole Donald Trump approach. Like, if there's an approach that Trump wanted America to do, Kim Reynolds is doing just that. So I haven't been doing much I haven't really done much in-person comedy since then. I've been trying to stay away from it. My wife is very concerned. I'm also concerned. My parents are older, so I don't want to, like, obviously do anything there. So but it's still going on. The comedy Teehee's Comedy Club is still going, which is great. I'm like, it's really hard because it's like, yeah, should they, public health wise? No, it probably shouldn't be open. But from, like, they're not going to make money otherwise. And
so, yep.
Unless the government's going to give them money or someone's going to pay them money, they're kind of stuck at that point.
Yep. No, that's exactly it. I've seen a lot of people, you know, even comedians criticizing comedy clubs and businesses like that are trying to stay open. And it's like, you know, I get from the, you know, public health concern, but if the government isn't going to step up, you know, their bills aren't, like, going away.
Yeah. You know? So it's been interesting, because there are certainly people, like, in Des Moines that I know have been upset with people putting on shows and kind of just posting flippantly about, like, yeah, I'm just having a great time at the show. But, like, I don't know. It's hard to do. It's hard. It's just difficult, really.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It's easy. Like, I can see it from, you know, kind of both sides and the different perspectives. Oh. I get it, you know, kind of all sides. But, I mean, everybody's going to do their own thing regardless. So all you can do
is Minnesota, is there anything, like?
We've had phases where we were shut down for a little bit, and then we opened things back up. You know, like, over the holidays, they shut restaurants and bars down to indoor dining, which meant the comedy clubs were closed. And we just actually opened up last week for indoor dining again. Okay. So clubs and stuff are running. But they're also at reduced capacities, too.
Mm-hmm. I will say Teehee's has been at reduced capacity pretty much the whole time now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's still, like, at the beginning it was. I don't know if the governor actually is requiring that anymore. But we've had indoor dining this entire time, besides, like, the initial shutdown.
Yeah.
Indoor dining's just can happen whenever. But, like, I know the Funny Bone I think the Funny Bone was shut down for a bit. But I think they started doing shows around Christmas again. So, but yeah, it's...
That was probably a corporate thing, or I don't know. That's the other thing that's been weird about this, yeah, too, that with the pandemic and everything, is like, for one, every state's different. And then,
yes,
which makes it kind of difficult. But then on top of that, they have like different regulations for different kinds of businesses. You know, like in California, they're like bars and restaurants can be open, but not anything that has, but there can't be any live performances, which is like, well, yeah, that makes no sense. If there's people already there, why can't there be entertainment too? I don't understand that, you know, like. And yeah, and so every state's different too in that capacity, so it definitely makes things difficult.
Yes, for sure. It's yeah, I don't know. I know like Woolies, which is a music venue in Des Moines, I think they've been doing shows now for a while too, so it's just like, fair game. I mean, the way someone put it to me is, it's like, obviously the people who are going to go out will go out, so there's an audience there for that, and the people who aren't going to go out just aren't going to go out. So it's like,
yeah,
you know, you might as well do it, get some of that business if the people don't care, if you want to do it that way.
Yeah, that's the other thing, you know, when you see people getting upset at these venues, they're like, well, they're tempting people. Well, no, those people are going to go do something regardless. That's whether, yes, if everything shuts down, then you know what they're going to do? They're just going to have their own giant parties. Either way, they're still going to be around other people and do what they want and whatever. And, exactly, and yeah, and that's just it. I mean, businesses need to try to capitalize on that in this, you know, because otherwise they're not going to be able to stay open. And it sucks because, you know, the government really didn't do a very good job at helping these businesses. You know, they're like, oh, shut down. But we're going to give all the money to these big corporations and let them stay open, you know, which is so infuriating. No, I mean,
it's very maddening with, like, Iowa had a huge issue with the meatpacking plants. A lot of people got sick because they were, you know, they're told to stay open because, you know, they're essential business. But then it founds out they're making record profit and they're selling to China. And it's like, you're not even like selling to Americans at this point. You're just like reaping benefits and then sending it off and stuff. So it's like, yeah, it's kind of sketchy with all that stuff with the bigger corporations.
Yep, that's for sure. That is for sure. Oh, man. So have you, so I know you have a show that you did that you produced. It's not quite just stand up now. Have you been doing, did you do that virtually, did you try it virtually, or
it's the Gram, it's an Instagram based comedy game show, so we typically have we have stand-ups or improvisers kind of mixed whatever that come on the show, and it's just we play 5 rounds all Instagram based, like a caption round where my co-host Muhammad Yal will put up a random picture or video, and then there's just contestants just write down what their caption or video is. So it's like real quick thinking, one-liner type of stuff. There's a hashtag round where people just write hashtags to whatever that picture video is. When it first happened, we tried virtually, but like I couldn't get anything to work with my, like, I tried with my computer. I'm a tech guy, but like my computer just didn't have enough manpower in it to.
Oh yeah, that actually
process all that.
I know exactly what you mean.
So like I trying to do a Zoom and then trying to stream it, it just didn't work, basically. Like it just lagged way too much. So we pretty much, and that obviously was in like March and April. And then once it got warmer, we actually had in my backyard, we had outdoor shows. So we had like a few less contestants. By the end, we had a little more when everyone was feeling a little more recovered. But everyone, we have a big enough backyard, everyone can kind of space out. So we had some decent shows doing that. And then come October, the funny thing is, we were going to do our first show at Teehee's Comedy Club the week everything got shut down. So we were so close to being there. And so like we just wanted to make sure we could do it there. And so eventually, you know, in October, I was like, hey, maybe the pandemic's going to get a slightly better. Maybe it won't be so bad. And so we booked a show literally the week after the day, like Black Friday, I guess we did it. Like leading up to that, like is when actually our governor cared a little bit and like shut everything, kind of put in more restrictions and things, but didn't shut the comedy club or anything. down, but like where it was like everything, if you look at the positivity rate, it was the highest at that point in Iowa baseball when we did the show. And so it was a little tricky, but you know, it, for me, like it come down the same thing. I'm like, yeah, I could cancel the show, but we just decided to go through because it's like, it's Sid, the Teehee's owner. Like it's his business. I don't want to back out on my word with him. So
yeah.
I just wore a mask. I wore a mask the whole time. I tried not to get too close or whatever. And we didn't, we had a decent sized crowd. We didn't like pack the house. That's the other weird thing. Is like when you're producing a show, you like want to pack the house, but during a pandemic, it's like, eh, I don't know if I really want to do that.
Well, it makes it like, easier because packing the house is, you know, especially when you got 25% to 50% capacity, it makes it easier.
Yeah, that's true.
You don't have to work still, as hard.
That's a fair point, but still, you're like, that's so too many people for me. But whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, we had a decent show, and it went well. Everyone who was there enjoyed it and that stuff. But basically, since then, I think Muhammad would do it if I wanted to do the show. But now it's essentially just waiting it out. I think until it's warmer, and we'll do more outside shows or until I get vaccinated. Basically,
I feel that.
Then I'll feel better about it.
You know, it's kind of funny because pre pandemic. Outdoor comedy was hated severely.
Yes.
People were like, I am not performing outside. Outside is not for comedy. Then we get hit with this pandemic, and everybody's like, yeah, outside comedy. Even so much so that I think in the summertime, even once people, you know, when we get kind of back to some normalcy and people are vaccinated and things are more under control, I still think people are going to be doing outdoor shows, and I still think people are going to be doing, you know, virtual shows as well. I don't think either of those are going to go away. Where prior, though, people were like, no, absolutely not, unless I'm making a lot of money.
I can say that. I never really considered an outside show up until this point. And now, like, in my head, even if it goes a little, if it's still going on, I'm like, could I have an open mic in my backyard? I'm like, oh, this is getting sad if I'm thinking about holding an open mic in my backyard. Like, if I'm thinking about that, just inviting random people over.
I actually put a stage and everything in my basement, and because I was working on setting my basement up to do shows prior to the pandemic, and then during the pandemic I got laid off, and I got temporarily laid off, and then I did get called back to work, and then my position got terminated. Either way, you know, I was going to school, so it was fine. But it gave me the time to just concentrate on that. So that's what I did. Like for the first part of the pandemic, I just I built the stage. I did the stage.
Oh,
I put up curtains. I like got it all set up and ready to go. But at the same time, even though I want to plan on doing shows, it's like I don't want to. You know, having it at my residency, like, I don't want to just open it up to anybody. You know what I mean? Like, with a backyard, having an open mic, you don't want just random people hanging out at your place, you know?
Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, they could easily steal my shit or case my place for later.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like,
yeah. Because we did.
I trust.
Go ahead. Yeah.
I was like, I trust most of you, but I don't know all the time.
Yeah. I did one show in my basement before I had it even set up. And it was more of a trial run to see how it would work. And then if it worked, then I would, then I was going to put more effort into it. And it was a friend of mine from Massachusetts that was touring his show. It was called Very Sad Man. So what we did is I had some other comics on the show, and what I did was I was like, hey, this isn't open to the public, but if you vouch for, by all means, invite your friends. If you vouch for them, they're welcome to the show. And we had a decent little crowd, but that's, there was still some vetting. You know, some of them were still strangers to me, but I made all the comics vouch for the people they invited because I was like,
no, that's good. I like that. That's like our outside show. It was nice because we just invited people we knew or whoever was on the show, could bring one or two guests. And so it was kind of cool because it was just like definitely just had people there that were there for the show. It wasn't like doing a random show at a random bar, and people are just like kind of just filing in, and then they don't know what the fuck they're getting themselves into, type of thing.
Yeah, so that's always nice too, like when you have more of a controlled setting like that, because like you said, people know what they're getting into versus, you know, them hijack shows at bars.
Yes. Exactly. Have you done many virtual shows?
I've done a few. I'm actually producing. I'm doing a monthly virtual show that I'm going to be producing, co-producing with another comic up here in the cities. We're doing a clean showcase, but I've also did some other stuff that I produced, and I've hopped on some open mics and things like that. And I've enjoyed it. You know, it's not, it'll never be live stand-up comedy, but it's still, you know, you're still getting to perform. And of course it helps that, like, if I have like a really big virtual show, I use my basement now. So, you know, so like if I'm not hosting and I'm on somebody else's show and it's a bigger show, I'm doing a longer set or whatever, I'll use my basement to do the show. Nice. I actually did that to help get ready for my dry bar taping, since, you know, there wasn't a much stage time because things, you know, it was during the pandemic and things were not really open everywhere. I just did a bunch of virtual shows in my basement. You know,
nice. It worked out. That part's cool, is that you don't even have to leave your house.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And that was the thing too with it, is like, I've did some open mics, and what I found is even the open mics where it's just other comics, they've been very supportive with each other. So it's not like when you go to an open mic at your local open mic at your local club or a bar where every comic's in there doing their own thing and could care less what you're doing on stage. And there's like maybe one or two audience members. A lot of the mics I've did, mostly comics, but they're all watching and, you know, listening and engaging in it. Yeah, and enjoying the show, you know. And then I've had other shows where there's, you know, audience members. And, you know, I did some stuff over the holidays that really good shows. There's like 40 people at these shows. And, you know.
That's awesome. I'm glad that's going on. I really have not done it much of it at all. If someone asked me, I would, but I just haven't seeked it out really that much. Maybe I don't know. I'd just rather do it live, but like, yeah, I understand that it can go well, and I'm sure it's a lot, like it's pretty good, but I just haven't hopped on board with it. Maybe I'm just busy doing other things. I don't know.
That could be like, well, and I think, like I said, it is weird because there's still a little bit of a learning curve with it, you know, as far as not just like getting used to technology, but you know, there's differences between performing on stage versus performing, you know, virtually. And one of the thing is, like, if you tell a joke on stage, you can almost instantly, if it's a good joke, get a good laugh. Whereas virtually, you have to wait because there's a delay. So, like, you'll tell a joke and get nothing and think, oh, man, they didn't like that joke. And then you, like, want to rush into the next thing. And as you're getting ready to do the next thing, then suddenly there's laughter and you're like, oh, yeah, that delay. So you really got to think about timing and stuff and how you perform. And obviously, if you know, most people, they're sitting down when they perform. So like, and you're not holding a microphone. So it's, you know, there's different little things that you got to kind of get used to with it. But overall, it's been all right. I mean, I've had some fun. The biggest thing I think is it's been a great opportunity for networking and meeting comics from all over the country. And that's been huge, you know, because now when things do open up, you know, all these people in all these different areas. And they're, you know, there's kind of like how you have your comedy scenes like in each town. And then there's, you know, the United, you know, the American comedy scene, if you will, or whatever. There's kind of a virtual comedy scene now.
No, that makes sense. I hadn't really thought about that much, but that makes sense. It is easier to meet people from all over now, because obviously no one's just attending their local club at that time.
Yeah. And especially if you get, you know, like I said, when you have shows where there's an audience and stuff too, that also puts you in front of a different market, because it's going to put you in front of people that aren't going to see you at your home club when you're performing, because they're not from Iowa, you know?
Yeah.
So, definitely gives you potential for, you know, building a following, if you will, new fan base, that kind of thing.
No, that's cool. Maybe I'll look into it a little more.
Yeah, well, if you want more info on it, I highly suggest looking at the Displaced Comedians Facebook group. It's a Facebook group that was created right at the beginning of the pandemic that's all up for virtual comedy. And they have a list of all the open mics and people put in when they're looking for people for shows and all kinds of different things there. It's a pretty useful group. So, yeah, if you want to look into the virtual comedy, I definitely check that out.
All right.
But
that sounds good.
Enough about this virtual comedy. We need to talk about the art of bombing, and I would love to hear your story of a time where you felt like you bombed or it was just a really bad show.
Okay. So I was, I had to think about it for just a little bit. Not a humble bragging. That sounds like a humble brag. I think my memory is just like, I just, when I'm on stage, it like just disappears after that. Like, I just don't, I remember things well, but not well enough, I would say. But I think the one, it actually happened earlier this year, before everything shut down. I actually pulled it up because I keep a tally of all the jokes and shows I've done. And it was actually February 29th, so leap year or whatever.
Oh, no. Man, it was on leap day. Leap year on leap day? Day?
Leap
wow.
year? Leap day?
Whatever
I don't know
it is.
What it's called.
It was February 29th.
February 29th, 2020. And so there's a local comic who does a lot of road shows in Iowa, and I reach out to him periodically to, I enjoy his company, so I want to do a show, and he hit me up about this show, and he's just like, yeah, I forget how he phrased it, but he's basically just like, yeah, it's a show at like this local bikers club. last year I just got blacked out, and like, it was just fucking crazy or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, like, I'm more of a clean comic, but I'm just like, it's one of those things. Maybe you can relate. You just want to do it for the experience. You're just like, this just sounds interesting.
Most of the terrible gigs that I take, it's because I'm like, I want to see what this is like.
That's like what it was. And that's, I mean, for me, that's why I like doing comedy, is it just leads to you doing different things. And like, yeah, I was just like, okay, this will probably go, I'm not expecting it to go well, but I hope I get a few laughs, But sure enough, I take the gig and we go, and there's like, I think it was like, I don't remember how long. It's like, I forget if the show is like there because it's just like an annual get together at this biker club. So it's like this underground bikers club. It's at this building. And you like go in, and all these guys who have like regular day jobs, I'm guessing, just like working at regular places, are all dressed up as bikers, and there's no rules and like that type of stuff. Like, this is the type of bikers club it is. And I'm just a sweet, wholesome boy. So it's like I stand out like a Thor sub, basically.
So basically, you're like every character in a movie that involves somebody stumbling into a biker bar.
Picture that. That's what I'm doing. Like, where you're just like, I did not know this culture existed. Like, this is, like, I thought this was only in movies, but no, this is like real life. It's just so weird because all these guys are wearing like leather jackets. The women are all dressed up like biker babes or whatever you want to call them. It's a rough and tumble crew. It was in a town in Iowa that's a little rougher of a town, like blue collar town. So mm-hmm. There's like three or four other guys on the show, and I believe I'm opening, which I am not upset with because I know I'm like, I should not be the headliner because people will not, and like my comedy probably will not go that great with them. Well, the other thing about this story is I had asked the guy who had booked me for the show. I was like, hey, like, am I able to like sleep overnight? Because it's where it was. It's on the Mississippi River. So like 2.5 hours away from Des Moines or whatever. in Clinton, Iowa. And so it's far. And so like, I'm not driving back that night. It was going to be like late night, especially if I was drinking or something, because apparently you just took vodka shots the whole time there. That's what he told me. So I get there. I'm like, I'm not fucking sleeping here. I already know. Like, why? I'm like looking around, like, where the fuck am I going to sleep? Like upstairs above the bar that is just open air. Like, it's not like if you go upstairs, you can still see down and like.
So wait, so it was like a loft. So they were gonna let you.
It's like a loft.
They were gonna let you stay at the venue.
Supposedly, yes, at the venue, at the biker club.
Yeah. Okay. Oh wow.
So I was just like, yeah, I'm not gonna do that, but I'll still try to have as much fun. But so essentially, it's just like. You know, before the show, it's just like, yeah, this is going to be real interesting, fascinating time. I had my material. I had my go-to material that, you know, usually works in most places, depending on whoever it is. It doesn't matter that much. And I get called up and I'm doing my set. Nothing's hitting. Everyone's just talking loud. It's a biker's bar. No one's fucking actually paying attention. And it's also like a chili. It's also like a chili cook-off thing too. So like, there's a bunch of chili in the back that everyone was trying to taste and things during set. So I don't know. Maybe they're all more focused on chili.
Can you blame them?
No. Yeah, that's true. It was good chili. I think I had some of it. I mean, then. The moral is, I really enjoyed my time. All the people there were great. But during my set, it was fucking awful because, I'm up there just, like, trying to tell any jokes. No one's really laughing. You know, you might get a few smirks from, like, people in the audience. But, like, you know, I'm not feeling great. Everyone's not really paying attention. And I'm just thinking, I'm just, like, going through my head. I'm like, okay, that didn't work. Let's just skip and go to this next bit. This will work better. Doesn't work. And so like, I think I was supposed to do or 10 or 15 minutes, and I just know, like, I remember seeing the light and I'm like, that feels awfully early, but yet like, I'm just like, not, you know, like, I'll take what I can get because I don't think I'm gonna win this crowd over at this point. And yeah, I just tried any of my material. I honestly could go through it. I wrote it down. I could just go through my jokes. And this is how I grade my jokes. I'll just go. I won't say what the jokes were, but basically this is how I grade my jokes. I go eh if it doesn't work. I go good if it's good. Goodish if it's in between eh and good. And then great is if I think the audience usually typically will. Most audience laughs at it. So basically this is how my set went. And then I have a DNS, which means I did not say. So it goes, did not say, good, goodish, Then, okay, get this. I have a Joe Biden joke that basically is where I've in my life, Joe Biden, the now pretty much president of the United States of America, has whispered in my ear while rubbing my back. That has truly happened to me.
Oh wow.
It was weird. I mean, I ran teleprompter for Joe Biden events when he was running for president before like everything got shut down for my old job. And I'd done it a few times, never met him. And then one time I was, you know, sitting there before he went on, and he wasn't there yet, but I was sitting there like on my computer, and then the back door, and he comes in behind me, and all of a sudden his hands are just on my shoulder and just whispering in my ear. And like, I straight up don't remember what he said to me because it was so weird. And oddly comforting. Like, that's the thing. You're like, oh, this is like a grandpa feel to it. But then you're like, oh, I understand why all these women would have an issue with like him. Like, why there's some people are like creepy Joe Biden stuff. But basically, I tell that joke because I know, in, you know, blue collar, maybe rural areas, or, you know, more conservative leaning areas, less liberal areas, it's probably going to get a good laugh because And honestly, most places, because that's just a stereotype, Joe. But that got a good. So that was my one good joke I got. I can still go along. And then it went, then goodish, good. Did not say goodish, and great. So I must have ended, or at least made myself feel better that I ended well. But if you could tell, like, the first, I don't know, three quarters of those jokes just didn't land and did not go well. And yeah. It's just me, like, just fucking, I don't know, I just trying to kill time. And, yeah, so I basically got, it didn't go that well. And then I got the light, and I got off stage, and I was like, yep, definitely got lit way too, like, way early, but understandably so, because it was not going great. So that's my bombing story.
No, how did everybody else do on the show?
I would say,
in comparison to how your set went,
I would say everyone did better. I wouldn't say anyone did. There was only probably one person who I would say did really, like, really good, like, won over the crowd, and he's Mike Andralis is his name. Funny, really mm-hmm. funny guy. He's out of Davenport. He like crushed it. He was hilarious, and really got the crowd on their side. Everyone else, I would say, did better. I definitely was, because all the other comics were more dealt with that more type mm-hmm. of terror. Weren't as clean comics as I guess.
Well,
I
and that's the other thing too with that. Like that, like there's just certain situations where we as comics have to accept we're not the right fit. You know, yeah. Like that's one of the situations where
mm-hmm.
definitely.
That's the thing. I knew going in, like when I was pitched the show, I knew I was not probably the right thing. I just wanted to go for the experience. So,
oh, absolutely.
That's why. I mean, so it was like, it sucked in a way, but it wasn't like a show where I expect to do well and then I just sucked, basically. Yeah. So,
I did.
It was an experience.
That's funny. A couple of years ago, I did. Well, I guess it's been more than a couple now, but. Because I think I was still living in Sioux Falls at the time, but I did a Christmas party for a motorcycle club, and yeah. It was like in this small town in Minnesota where literally, like, it was so weird that they had it there at this particular bar, just because their biker club was bigger than the population of this town. You know, like the town, like, population was like 8. And they yeah. had their holiday get together at this bar there, and so there's like 60 of them, which pretty much,
yeah.
which is yeah, so from. Which is funny. But then it was funny because you know, when we're doing the show, this person kept coming in there, and they like sat down and they were kind of heckling, and they were being a pain in the butt or whatever, and ended up yeah. you know, trying to deal with them because they were the way they were, and the crowd, you know, the people that hired me to do the show, they were, I couldn't tell at first. I didn't realize until afterwards, but I couldn't tell, like, they seemed embarrassed by the person, but like in the way that they're like, oh man, them again, he can never, you know, they can never just behave themselves in public or whatever. Well, yeah. Then it turned out they weren't even part of the group. They just wandered back from the front of the bar, but nobody in the group said anything. They were just like, I guess.
Oh my God.
But it ended up being kind of entertaining because I kept having to, you know, put some attention on them, and we went back and forth, and I made them look dumb, and the rest of the crowd was really getting into it. And the more they were getting into it, that's why I thought they were part of the group. Because it was like they're laughing yeah. at their friend. But, yeah, like I said, it turned out they had no idea who that was. just some people there. Wandered back there.
That's so weird. Oh, my gosh.
Wandered back, and they're like, yeah, let them stay, I guess.
Yeah, it's fine. They can watch the show.
Why not? That's paid for.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It ended up being a good time, too, but...
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, I honestly would enjoy going back to this club because it was just so random. But, like, I don't know. I mean, I just know I'd bomb again, so it's probably not a good idea. But,
well, I don't know.
It was an enjoyable time.
Do you ever think about when it comes to that, like, when you do a show and it goes bad for whatever reason and whatever, mm-hmm. like, if you could go back you might do better because now you've already experienced it this way, so you know what not to do. You know what I mean? Like, you might,
yeah,
oh, okay, true. So these are the jokes that they were really digging, so use these definitely and maybe add some stuff that's similar to this or whatever.
No, yeah, no, that's a good way to think about that. I mean, I have some stuff that I know.
Well, it's like, it's one of them things where it's like having redemption, you know,
yes.
You like do so bad somewhere. You just want to go back one time and perform again and do better. Like I did a casino a couple years ago and the whole weekend was terrible for me. Like I just felt terrible. Like it was... The experience of staying at the casino and being there and all that was great. You know, that part of it was all great because, you know, they put you up or whatever. But, like, the performing part, like, I just felt like I was just doing terrible. And after that, you know, I was like, oh, man, I don't know if I want to do this again. And then I was like, you know what? I want to go back. And it's funny because I was actually scheduled to go back because it's like I want to go back for redemption. I want to go back and be like, hey, I am funny. See, watch me and laugh at me. And I got booked to go back. But then the pandemic happened and it got canceled,
which works out.
Might have saved me from further humiliation.
Yeah. Nothing worse than going back the second time and then it goes even worse. Like, oh boy.
Yeah, exactly.
Really?
They're like,
that's,
well,
not my place.
There's no three times a charm for you, buddy.
Yeah.
Two strikes, you're out.
Yeah, you're out. We're not doing three.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah. And you talked a little bit about this already. Oh, I guess I'll wait to get to that. The bumming of bombing, the dreadful feeling when you do bomb, how long does that typically last for you, and how has it changed over the years?
Oh, it definitely, you know, starting out, even like going to open mics or whatever, and yeah, initially when you like your first joke doesn't land and you're just like, what is going on? And then it like none of it seems to land. It felt pretty awful early on, but yeah, over time, I don't know. You just learn and you just learn as part of the process. And, you know, it doesn't seem obviously like this experience, I enjoyed it and, as much, but yeah, there's, you know, it can still sting, but it's basically for me, you know, it's, you just kind of learn from, you know, it's just a learning experience in the end. You kind of be like, okay, that's why it maybe didn't work as well there or whatever. That's how. So, I mean, I try to think of it as positively as I can. So it doesn't like sting necessarily for a long time. Obviously in the moment, like I still feel like at times I don't do great with it where it's like, it's not going well. So then I feel like I'm talking faster. I'm just trying to get to something that's going to work. And you're just digging yourself in a deeper hole. It's like hard to just like, just calm yourself and then just kind of just slow down and then just try like, do it that way or try to switch it up. I there's still like for me, yeah, it's like I wish I could be better at when it doesn't go as well or I want it to go better to realize that in the moment and try to shift it to something else. But yeah, that's just something that just comes with time, really.
Yeah, well, that's the one thing too with the bombing part. Like, yeah, you're right, it stings, you know, especially right when it's happening, but they make for great stories, you know, like, and the experiences, just, you know, like going to that biker club and, you know, and deciding not to stay there.
I forgot to mention at some point during the show, there was this couple, I remember like seeing them as the show was like starting and it was this guy and a girl and like, you know, that you could see something was going on there. At some point they ended up upstairs and having sex during the show, like upstairs.
Oh my.
Like you couldn't see it, but like you knew that's what happened because someone like basically was saying it afterwards. But like,
yeah,
and then they came back downstairs. But during the show, someone was just, you know, having a good time there without listening to comedy necessarily.
Or maybe that's what got them going. They're like, yeah, ooh, we're laughing.
Yeah, it was that part was. It's just wild. It's just different world for me. Just
oh yeah,
completely different world.
Yeah, that's one of the things, too, that's really fun about doing some of the smaller rural areas, because it always seems like it's an adventure. You never know what you're going to get, either. Like, even, the shows can be great, and a lot of times they are great, because in those smaller communities, you know, there's not much going on, so everybody will come, but they end up being so much fun, like, after, with the interactions with all these people, because you never know what kind of people are going to be at the show.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. Like, after the show, we, like, hung out for a while and just talked to everyone. Even though they all were using their code names, no one went by their, like, real name.
They had code names.
Yeah. Just a little ridiculous.
That's so funny. That's like the boys club thing or something from when you're a kid, you know, like you have your little secret club, your secret handshakes.
That's what it is. It was really weird, but I mean, entertaining enough, but like, this is like one of the things that happened that was like so weird. That just is not something not a thing I've ever been a part of in my life. But at one point, one of the guys was just like, yeah, you want to see some tits or something? And he was like, hey, honey, lift him up. And then showed us her boobs.
I actually
turned away because I was like, this is fucking weird. And then one of the other guys is like, hey, man, you gay or something? I'm like, oh, my God.
At that point, you're like, it's time to get out of here. Somebody take me home. Before I get murdered. That's funny. I've been flashed one time.
Really?
During a show. But this was like back in San Diego. It was like at a bar show. And I don't know, this lady kept heckling me. Well, she was kind of heckling everybody. And I don't know, she said something. And by the end of the interaction, she flashed me. Like, I don't even remember what our interaction was, but then by the end of it, she had flashed me. And I was like, well, that's a new comedy achievement unlocked.
Like, yeah, is that really heckling? Like, you're showing me your boobs? Like, what? Like, is that supposed to be disrespectful to me? Like, I don't understand.
Yeah, right? Are you trying to hurt my feelings? What's going on here?
Yeah. Oh, real weird.
Yeah, that's what happens when super drunk people, they get obnoxious. No fear, they'll do anything. And then the next day, when the friends are like, "Do you remember last night?" No.
Oh no.
Well, let me tell you. Do I have a story for you? So when you're bombing, or if a joke doesn't land, what goes through your head in the moment?
If it doesn't land, like I kind of said, like, obviously if it's the first one that has it gone, it's kind of like, okay, didn't expect that, but maybe try like another one if it's in that same like theme or set or bit part of that. And if that doesn't go, then it's like, all right, I might just move to something else, see if there's something else I can relate to the audience with that I think out of my repertoire works better. It's certainly like, at least for sure, more early on, it was definitely like an oh shit moment. Like I really panicked. Like where you're just like, oh fuck, what am I going to do? Like they don't like this joke. Oh no, they're not going to like the rest of my set.
Yeah, I've definitely been there. I've did that where, and then I don't know if this has ever happened to you, but I've had situations where, your jokes aren't working, you're bombing, you start to panic. And I used to get real nervous on stage. And so then I'd like freeze up and like forget too. Like it would send me into such a panic that I would just forget all my jokes. Yeah, it's bad.
I don't think I fortunately haven't got all the way. I think early on it got, I was more worried about that stuff. But
oh, same here.
I don't think I ever have entirely just forgot or anything. But I fortunately don't freeze up. But yeah, my worst trait is I think I try to talk too fast then, or like if something doesn't land, then I'm just like, all right, let's move on to the next thing.
I'm right there with you.
And because it's like, the other thing is, otherwise I fall in the trap of I can be too self-deprecating, like, and then I feel like that doesn't help me.
Yeah.
Well, I think sometimes it does, but sometimes it can be too much, and then it's just like, does this guy think any of his jokes are actually funny if he's always just shitting on his jokes and they don't work?
Yeah, that, and I found, too, with the way people are kind of hypersensitive just to, like, all things, when you're too self-deprecating, they don't think it's funny. Instead, they feel bad for you.
Yeah.
Instead of laughing, yeah, they want to be like, aww, yeah. So sad.
That's the thing. Like, I've certainly had those moments. Probably more so that happens at open mics when I'm just trying, like, new material or something. You know, when it's like something you're like might be out there and it's like, yeah, I don't know if this is gonna go well anyways, but like I just want to see what happens, and then it doesn't go well and I'm just like, all right, I'm sorry guys, that was, and then you're just like, why am I saying this? But at the same time, it's like, I, you know, it's a weird thing to not, I always feel bad. I'm a generally nice person, so I always overly apologize, I feel like, so that just comes through on stage, and that can be to my detriment, I feel like, at times.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can see that. Now, you already talked a little bit about this when you were talking about your bombing story, but I don't know if you can add to it. How do you analyze your sets when you bomb to try to improve your next show?
Typically, my, like I said, I did that. I have my little scorecard, I guess.
Do you write that down? Like,
yes.
You write, okay.
After almost, I try to do it right after I do the set, best I can. But obviously at these bigger shows, it's kind of harder because obviously you're like maybe talking to more people or whatever. You're like, that show, like I was in the crowd. And so like, obviously I try not to do it like if someone else is on stage, like during an actual show, because I don't want to be disrespectful to them or anything like that. But yeah, I try to write that down as much as possible. And I also write down with that, if like a joke doesn't land well, or if it does land well, or something like something, I said something differently. Like I catch myself as I'm telling the joke, I'll remember to try to write that down to listen to it, because it's been so long since I've like done an open mic that I can't remember how my method was, but basically,
like, it's like I forgot what my process was.
Yeah, I forgot.
What's comedy?
No, part of it is I always record my set, but I can't remember if I don't always listen to it in full. I listen to parts of it mainly because I just don't. I wish I was better. I know the best people probably listen to their whole set all the time, but like if it's a 30-minute set, like I just can't find the time to sit down to listen to all of it, but I try to note where I want to listen to.
Which, that's better than some. I mean, I have a hard time even doing that, especially on longer sets. I've been trying to get better this year. Like, that's one of my goals this year, is to try to listen more to my audio. And so far, of the mics I've done, I've been listening back to the recordings.
Yeah. For me, whenever a new comic asks me any tips, that's the biggest one you can do, is just listen to yourself. Mm-hmm. That helps so much to improve and catch, you know, weird things you're saying that you didn't know you were saying. Basically in the set, you know, I keep the notes of it, of how it's going. And if it's like a really bad one that I thought would go better, yeah, I'd probably listen to it more and just see if there was anything different. And sometimes I'll listen to it and I thought it went really bad, and then I can hear in the audio, oh, like there is audience laughing to it. It might not be as much as, like, you know, as I want, but it wasn't dead silence like I assumed it was at that point, because I'm just blacked out, because I'm just panicking, because it doesn't feel like it's going well.
And I've definitely experienced that too. Sometimes that's good listening back, because you do, like, you'll find, oh, you're bombing, or it feels like you're bombing, you feel like your set is going bad, and then you listen back and it's not nearly as bad as you thought, because it happens, you know, depending on the layout of the room or the stage. Like, sometimes you just don't hear the audience like you think you do.
Exactly. I agree. I thought I had something more. I do not.
That's all right. That's all right. All right. Yeah. Well, we're gonna start wrapping up with some of the fun stuff. Do you have a song? I've got the Art of Bombing Get Pumped playlist. So I add songs of comedians like that get them pumped. What's a song that gets you pumped? If you have one.
Okay. Honestly, I'll try to think of something, but honestly, the thing that I will watch that tries to get me pumped up, and I haven't done this for a while, but I was doing it for a little bit, was you're a wrestling fan, aren't you?
Yeah.
Like, you know your WWE history.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, a little bit, yeah. I mean, I'm not up now, but yeah.
No, but like 90s, correct?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
Like Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, absolutely.
Maybe.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
So I'm like an in and out wrestling fan. I'm never like, I don't know all the diehard stuff or whatever, but I know enough of it and I've had experience watching some. And there's this one WWE, I think it might have been WWF at the time, but it was Stone Cold Steve Austin. Maybe you remember this better. Oh, now I'm remembering. I believe it was the ECW, maybe it was taking over the WWE or something. And there was like all these wrestlers were fighting and like the ECW was beating up the WWE and like Stone Cold was like at a bar somewhere. I don't know what the bit was, but basically what happens is Stone Cold shows up out of nowhere and then just starts beating the shit out of all these ECW wrestlers and saves the day.
Yeah.
And it's a video on YouTube and I watch that to pump myself up. Just Stone Cold just beating the shit out of people. That's what if I need to pump myself up, I watch that because it's fucking awesome because Stone Cold just comes out of nowhere.
So are you telling me that Breaking Glass is what needs to be added onto the playlist? Stone Cold's intro music?
Yeah. Yeah, because like that's what happens is he first shows up in like a like an Escalade. It's probably not an Escalade, but feels like an Escalade.
Yeah.
People up outside, and then it cuts to like slightly inside, like in the backstage area, and then like he beats more people up there, and then it like comes to the audience. There's like a huge brawl going on with all the different wrestlers from WWF to ECW fighting each
other.
Yeah,
that and, could know, have even crowd. Been the WCW too. Like,
it might be because
I remember
probably WCW. That's probably who it is. I like I said, I don't know wrestling that well, but I know it was like.
Yeah,
one of the wrestling promotions was invading WWF or WWE, whatever it was at the time. I think it's WCW, honestly.
Yeah, I think it was because I remember that they used to have battles where like they were going to each other's shows and messing with them.
Yeah, and so this I think was the culmination of it all. I think
the but Attitude like, yeah, Era, baby.
Yeah, and so like all I remember is he beats the people up backstage and it cuts to the broad shot. Of like the actual audience and then like the people in the ring all fighting and like you'd see the crowd just like looking around. They're like they know Stone Cold's there and they're just waiting for that pop of his entrance music. And then he comes out and it's just like him just walking all down, all fucking pissed, like talking about things and just going through each person and just I forget what his move is, but just fucking the Stone Cold stunner.
Yeah, the stunner.
Every single wrestler there. Like, it's ridiculous. But that's what pumps me up when I watch a show. So, yes, his intro song would probably be the song you should use.
Okay, all right. I'll definitely see if I can add that to it. That's awesome. I love it. You're like, I don't listen to music to get pumped up. I watch somebody get their asses kicked.
Hell yeah. That's what I'm doing. I'm trying to kick my audience's ass.
Yeah. Get pumped. I love it. What's been your favorite gig so far?
Oh, I could have came on and simply said the Paul Bunyan Comedy Festival because it really was. It's been a highlight.
Oh, that's good.
San Diego Comedy Festival is the only comedy festivals I've gotten in, and they've been fun. So I've enjoyed the experience. So I thought that might be too much brown nosing. So
I'm not involved in either one of them, so it's all good.
Yeah, but you were at the time.
I was, That's how we met.
Yeah, exactly. And so basically, outside of that, there was another show earlier this year I did. And I wasn't supposed to do the show, actually. I was actually trying to go up to Minnesota to do, I think the 10K Brewing show. I don't know, with Casey's show up there. And then I think I was maybe doing a, I was going to do a show the next night for Casey somewhere else, but I don't remember where. But big snowstorm came through. It was like January, I think. Mm-hmm. And like, couldn't go. Like, straight up, I wanted to go, but like, roads just were like absolute shit. Like, 35 was not going to happen.
Out here, never.
Yeah. Yeah. And I was just like, dang it. And, but fortunately, like, earlier that week, a guy had reached out to me, an Omaha comic had reached out to me. I don't know if you know who Brandon Q is, if you've heard of him.
Name does not sound familiar.
Yeah, he does quite a few like corporate shows, but he had reached out to me earlier in the week, like asked if I want to help on a show, but because I was going to Minnesota or what I thought, I was like, no, but like here's someone I recommend that he could like host, that could host this corporate show for him. And so like obviously after this got canceled, I just hit him up and I was like, hey man, like I'll be in town. Like obviously I don't want to take the other guy's spot, but if you can just give me a little bit of time, like I'd appreciate that. And sure enough he did. And it was honestly a corporate show just at a golf in the basement of a country club.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went there and, is weird because it's at a country club, so it's kind of a different feel for a show, but we had a whole stage, we had a mic, and yeah, I went up and it was basically just a host, then me, and then doing a guest spot, and then Brandon doing his whole set or whatever. I did my set and it was like going, every joke was, it's just one of those nights where every joke just hit, like it just felt good.
Mm-hmm.
And I was feeling great about myself. Cause you're just like, yeah, I'm feeling the audience is on my side. Everyone's cool here. And then like, I usually end a lot of times. I have a bit where I talk about my hometown, which is a small rural town in Iowa. Typically no one knows what I'm talking about because it's a small town, but there's a person in this crowd who like knew people from this town who had stayed at this guy's house in like the father in town. And it was like, it was one of those moments where that guy just like brought it up as I was saying something. And there was a whole interaction of just like talking to him about it. It's just a cool little thing where I, didn't expect anything to come of it. And then all of a sudden we're like, it was just the in the moment at that time. Mm-hmm. That really made the show really fun. And, it was really cool because obviously I was bummed about not being able to go to Minnesota to do shows because I'd really been looking forward. I always enjoy going up there and doing stand up. But I was able to still just do a little bit of time and it really was super fun. And I really enjoyed the show.
That's awesome. Yeah, sometimes those corporate gigs can be pretty fun. Sometimes they can be terrible. Now, before I do the last thing, I do want to talk a little bit about this too, because I've been, I've kind of in the last few episodes actually been talking more about this as clean comedy. Mm-hmm. Just because,
yes,
I've just worked out that a lot of comics I've been talking to primarily were clean or whatever. And that's something you were clean. Is that something you like sought out to do when you started doing stand up?
Kind of, but like, I think part of the reason is my two favorite comics. Whenever anyone asks me who my favorite comics are, it's Jim Gaffigan and Mike Birbiglia. And they're both pretty clean comics from like, obviously mm-hmm. Gaffigan and his Birbiglia pretty much is too. Like, not that I have a problem like with anyone who does dirty jokes or anything like that, but like, that's always what I've been more, I don't know, just always enjoyed. So like, and I knew like for me, like I just didn't want to try to, I don't want to swear on stage as much as I can. Mm. I actually swear quite a bit off stage.
I know. Funny because as we've had this conversation, you've been dropping a lot of cuss words, a lot of profanity. Yeah. And it's funny to me because I'm the same way. Like on stage, I can go hour not swearing, not being dirty, whatever. Mm. Off stage, sailor's mouth.
Yeah, I know. And that's, I'm the same way. Like, I know I swear too. I feel like I swear too much sometimes. Yeah. But when I'm on stage, I don't like flip a switch, it just goes off. Like, I don't know what it is, but something just changes in me. And yeah, I rarely like will swear on stage unless it's like really part of a punchline or something. Like,
yeah.
I, it's like there for a reason.
Oh, that's great. All right. Well, you're kind of cutting in and out now. So we are. I'm going to wrap up. I don't know if your internet's being goofy.
Oh,
but
my internet's crapping out.
I don't know if it's yours or mine, but I know you're coming in and out. But I'm going to. Okay. The last thing I like to do is it's a game called Pick a Number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20. And okay. I'm going to ask you a corresponding question that may or may not be comedy related.
Okay. I'll take number 7.
Number 7. What song would you have played at your funeral and why?
Oh,
Stone Cold Steam Music, because I'm going to kick the devil's ass.
Hell yeah. The highway to hell. That badass, I'm coming for you, devil. Look, badass.
You're about to get stunned.
Yeah, I... You know, if I honestly, if I was given a actual honest answer is like a true, really honestly, what I really would be Amazing Grace. I don't know what it is about that song, but it really means a lot to me. I remember when my grandma passed away, they played that song. And to me, I don't know, that song's always held a special place in my heart.
Yeah, it's a beautiful song.
I know it's kind of cliche. I think it's played at quite a few funerals, but for me, it's really cool, and it means a lot to me. I don't know. Yeah, that's basically it. It just is cool, and I really like the sound, and I think it's a great song to. Unfortunately, when I'm croaked. It's a good time to go out there, I guess.
Yeah, well, it's a beautiful song. That's that's definitely a good pick, of a song, and pretty safe bet too. Pretty safe bet. Probably better than Highway to Hell. You don't want to get people. All right. Well, this has been fantastic. Where can people find you? Where should they find you on social media and all that?
Yeah, you can just follow me on Twitter at Sean Dangler. That's D-E-N-G-L-E-R. The way I say my name, many people think it's D-A-N-G-L-E-R. D-E-N-G-L-E-R. Instagram is Dangler or at Dangler Sean. Otherwise, follow the Graham Comedy Show on Instagram. Just literally the Graham Comedy Show. You can look for that. Also on Facebook, but really, I just post the exact same thing on Facebook. Instagram is more exciting. So you can do that. I also have a podcast called Pandering Talk. It's usually do different types of episodes, basically. There's an episode I do with my friend where we pretty much just talk about sports or movies and culture. A good high school friend, basically.
Mm-hmm.
That's pretty fun. I've still been trying to work my way through Red Dead Redemption 2. I know it's been out 2 years. I'm trying 100%. It takes fucking forever. So usually there's a story in there about me bitching about some dumb thing that happened to me. One time my horse got ran over by a train. It was fucking bullshit. I'm still upset. Just got
it shows.
Went somewhere else, heard a train, and then heard my horse die. It was awful. It was terrible. So yeah, there's that, and then usually I do an episode a week just about like something I did the last week or some random thought I want to talk about. So yeah, that's basically it. And yeah, I mean I have a website, but like that's my name again. But there's really not much going on there. So like, check it out, make me feel good that someone's visiting my website, but it doesn't have too much there.
All right, perfect. Well, thanks for joining me.
Yes, thank you for having me, Dan.
This has been brought to you by Dead and Mellow. Follow us on all your social media platforms and shop around at deadandmellow.com to see all of our stand-up, music, and podcast releases. Thank you, and God bless America.
All right, see you later.
See you.
Are we actually leaving or just it?
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production. Hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe! so you can live to love.